It's Friday, and it's our Teach Computing podcast, which I'm recording each week. My name is Alan O'Donoghue. You can find me on Twitter, TechnoTeacher, T-E-K-N-O. And I feel lucky to have yet again...
Vicky Dodd, at Vickyville on Twitter.
And that's Vicky, V-I-K-K-I.
Yes.
So this podcast, we record each week to document, really, what we've been doing with our... Year 10 and Year 9.
And Year 9.
GCSE computing classes. I teach a Year 11 GCSE computing class, but I don't really feature that in this particular podcast. So I have had two lessons with my class this week, and in a moment I'm going to share a little bit about what I've done with my classes. But why don't you start?
I can start today. I did Pinky Partners with my Year 9 class, and that was following your introduction to Pinky Partners.
Yeah. Pinky Partners, you heard it here first.
I heard it here first, yeah. Folks. What I did is, previously I've sat students in my Year 9 group, weaker ones next to higher ability students, and I've done that since September, and what I realised is that the higher ability students were sometimes getting frustrated with the amount of support that they were being asked to provide, being constantly sat next to these students.
The ones who were, let's say, more confident, yes, or more knowledgeable, felt like they were being held back by the ones,
yes,
who weren't.
Okay. But also, I also realised that it was actually masking, in some ways, progress, true progress.
Yeah.
Because the higher ability ones are constantly supporting lower ability ones, and they can just see their computer screens to get hints and tips.
Right.
So
yeah,
really, what is their true programming ability?
Sure.
So I rearranged the classroom. I'd already done that. I'd already rearranged the classroom well before Easter. But following the introduction to Pinky Partners, I thought, okay, we'll implement Pinky Partners. So now every higher ability student, or, you know, even the ones that are kind of middling, we've paired up perhaps with other middling,
sure,
ones, but the really high ability have a Pinky Partner in a lower ability. So for any paired tasks now, they pair up,
yeah,
and to test each other's programs. And if the lower ability one feels that they have a question, then they have their Pinky Partner to go to,
yeah,
occasionally. When there's that comes up in a lesson.
So the Pinky Partners, the way I've done it is I've not used prior assessment, like SAT results and all that kind of thing. I've not used, or CATs, I've not used that. All I've done recently is tests and things that we've done in class, yes, that have been graded, and I've shared those grades. I've just sort of split the class in half with the ones who are getting the higher grades and the,
yeah,
ones getting the lower grades.
I haven't based, yeah, this on CAT scores anything like,
yeah,
that. This is purely on assessments in computing, because I don't feel that in some cases the CAT scores are particularly,
sure,
relevant, really,
yeah,
or accurate for computing. I've got a boy in my Year 10 class whose CAT scores were really quite low, and his ability in coding is phenomenal. So anyway, we did Pinky Partners, but what I also introduced with my Year 9 class this week was string handling.
Sure.
And that was the last topic that we really need to cover on the programming syllabus for OCR. And I was really struggling with a way to do it and to get them to understand how to do different string handling.
So you've been doing things like splitting strings,
yeah,
forcing them into different cases?
Not yet, no.
Yeah.
We've already been forcing them into different cases,
yeah,
because they've already learned how to do that with capital city quizzes and things like that.
Yeah. And
we introduced
using,
that quite early
is
on.
Is it upper that you use?
Upper, dot upper. And then open brackets, close brackets, dot title, dot lower, and that,
right,
forces case.
Okay.
So they've already done string handling, but they don't know that they've done it.
So if you had something like my name, Alan,
mm-hmm,
and it was all in lowercase, and it was a string, let's say name equals Alan,
mm-hmm,
could you then do name equals upper dot bracket, put the variable in there and close the bracket? Would that do that, or
no? You have to put the dot upper at the end, or dot title for name,
right,
to make,
yeah,
to force it to have a capital letter at the,
yeah,
beginning. It's dot title.
Right.
So if you wanted to do that to an input, a user input, you'd create the variable with the input and then, you,
sure,
know, the string, and then when you've closed the brackets for the string, it goes dot title and then open bracket,
right,
close brackets at the end. So they've already done string handling, but they don't know that they've done it. So now we've got a project that really is focused around string,
mm-hmm,
handling, and it's a hangman project. They will be creating a hangman game.
Right.
Obviously, that's got quite a lot of string handling in it, because,
yeah,
they need the purpose of the game is, obviously, they've got to have a list of words. We've already done lists with the Magic 8-Ball, but now they've got to generate a random word from the list.
Yeah.
But then they've also got to display the hangman. which is all made up of strings,
display
strings. But then as well, they've got to search a string to see if the letter that they get, they've got to search the string, and then it's got to return, and it's obviously got to have loops and things. But to scaffold that, I gave them a sequence of shorter tasks as to that they had to create programs that I'd given them on a task sheet, and they had to look at what each one was doing to try and scaffold their planning for their hangman task.
I think I've seen a hangman game in the Invent Your Own Games with Python.
Yes. Have you seen it? Yeah, there is one.
So anybody listening to this could find that. It's if you go to inventwithpython.com in your browser, that'll take you straight to that. I can't remember what chapter it is.
No, I actually found that one for my class was a bit complicated. Sure. I actually simplified it up, but I've put it on Cass.
Yeah.
I actually used David Bau, B-A-U, his version. Okay. And I adapted that because that was built in Python 2.7 and it didn't actually work in Python 3.2.
Because some of the ways like input and print are handled have changed in Python 3. Yeah.
And if you use just the David Bau version, it doesn't all print the dashes on one line. So where you're getting it to replace the word with dashes, it doesn't print it on one line. No, prints it, you know, on separate lines. And you have to use the end function for the string handling.
So you found that in the Computing at School community forum.
No, David Bau, I found his version by searching the internet, and then I edited it and I've uploaded my version onto Cass. So that's what we've done this week, and with my Year 10, just started the controlled assessment. They've been working on the task one of their controlled assessment.
Now, I'm just looking at my watch and thinking we're going to get interrupted by a bell in about 30 seconds. You might be wondering, why on a Friday afternoon would a bell ring? That's a good puzzle. So I've had two lessons with my class this week. And so I've been, with my Year 10 class, I've been doing the controlled assessment for A453, the programming assignment. And it's one where there's random is included in there a lot, and it has to come up with values for characters and that sort of thing. Now, we've had 2 weeks off for Easter. The bell was going to ring. So we had 2 weeks off for Easter, and we came back on Monday, and I just thought, to try and get them to go back into the controlled assessment in examination conditions or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, it's going to be a struggle. So I created four Python programming challenges that are built up. So the very first one was, could you build a program that would ask a person what their name is, what their age is, and then return a sentence as your name is? So your name is Vicky, and you are 24 years old. So that was the first challenge. And then the second one, then it had to ask for confirmation. So it would ask the name, the age, say what their age was. But then it would say, this is what it is. Is this correct? And if you said no, then it would enable you to go back and change it again.
Okay.
And then the third challenge was, if it's correct, if the person says why, because it's correct, then it's going to write their names and age to a file.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth bit was, it was going to ask them a certain number, so it could be like 3 or 4, but if you typed in quit as a name, then the whole program would stop, it would close the file and open it. So, you know the Google document that I've been sharing, we have this spreadsheet that shows like what their scores are and all that sort of thing. I decided to use that to track their progress. Now, if you listen to this and you want to find it, it's tinyurl.com/10aco1. So I have a tiny URL for something else. I put the programming challenges into another Google document, and that's tinyurl.com/10acomputing, and those programming challenges are in there. Now, one and two, I said, well, I encouraged them to work with their pinky partners. I said, today we're going to be in PPM. That's pinky partner mode. So they kind of seem to think it's funny. It's all a bit of a game. So they found the first one fairly easy, which was good. The second one, they're starting to find it a little bit more tricky. I then gave them an example of how they could go about it. And that was pretty much it for the first lesson. I set them a homework. I got them to watch Amy's video, the talk from the Jamboree. And I said I was going to ask them some questions next lesson about Conway's Game of Life and all this kind of thing. So in their second lesson, I realized they were struggling with the challenge. So what I did was I actually gave them a solution to challenge number two, but I put lots of faults in it. So I got them to copy it down into their book, but with the correct... So I said, there's lots of bugs in it. You've got to find the bugs and correct it. And I think there were six, and it was things like capitalization of variables.
Yeah.
I capitalized a function. There was brackets missing. Something else was misspelled. So it was all that kind of thing. So that was in the following lesson. That was mainly it. It was how to use it to solve it. Now, and then I decided this week for homework, I've said to them, I want you to do a little bit of research about this Conway's Game of Life. Because what I missed out was I did a test in the lesson whether to watch the video or not. And so the homework was they had to do a bit of research about Conway's Game of Life to find out what it's all about. Some of them were able to tell me it was about cell life forms and modelling how they reproduce and die and decay and stuff. But I want them to build a model in Scratch. Now, I said, I haven't figured out yet whether it's possible. I think it should be theoretically possible, but to go away and try and build a model of it. So next week, they're going to show me that they've modelled Game of Life using Scratch.
Right.
So that's about it, really.
Right. Can I just add one thing I've just remembered that I did with my Year 10?
Yep.
Very quick. The Magic 8 Ball task, because trying to get them to understand how they need to present a controlled assessment. So this is before noticing that they'd struggled with how to present a controlled assessment in Year 10. The Magic 8 Ball project that they previously completed, I wrote that up into a kind of exemplar controlled assessment because they understood the programming required already, rather than giving them the existing materials where they haven't got a clue, they just panic. Mm-hmm. So I actually wrote the Magic 8 Ball up as well and delivered that, which worked really well.
Gosh.
Okay.
So I found similar to that, giving them a completed solution that had lots of errors in it, that was a good way to start it as well. Now, I predict that in about maybe 10 seconds or so, we're going to be interrupted by another bell. I might be wrong, but if I'm right, it would probably ring in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's really amazing.
But that was just a guess.
Computer clocks don't do it like that.
No, they don't. So if you like listening to this podcast and you want to get more episodes, just go to iTunes and search Techno Teacher, TEKNO. A lot of the resources and things we talked about are online. If you like the episode, if you want to know things about it, I got a request this week. Somebody wants to know about Little Man Computer and how to teach that. So I think we need to make that a feature in a future podcasting episode.
I've got to go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.